You're not really wearing that, are you?
Wearing what?
The man purse. You actually gonna wear that? You guys just fucking with me.
It's where I keep all my things. Get a lot of compliments on this. Plus, it's not a man purse. It's called a satchel. Indiana Jones wears one.
So does Joy Behar.
Okay, and are you ready for the show?
Yay, we're ready, Lucy. Please start.
And so I started.
I'm Doug Stanhope, and if you're listening to this podcast, don't take my word for it. I got tricked into this in a merch booth.
It's the homemade broadcast.
The what podcast?
The homemade broadcast.
Homemade?
Homemade broadcast.
The homemade podcast.
Yes, sir.
This is very homemade right here. This shit right here, that homemade.
Personnel, this is CVTS. Space vehicle pre-count operations will start on my mark at 5, 4, 3...
2, 1. Hello, folks. Welcome to the Homemade Broadcast, HMB Radio, on RadioSaintPete.com. My name is Will Koontz, host of this here program, the Homemade Broadcast, heard every Sunday, 6:15 p.m. right here on Radio St. Pete. Mondays, replays, 10:15 p.m. and Tuesdays, 4:15 a.m. Eastern Standard Time. Or you can just get it on podcast and listen whenever you want. At HMBRadio.com, iTunes, Stitcher, just search for HMB Radio. There's other podcasts there. James Bailey's My Mom's Favorite Podcast, Funny Pricks with Kyle Roos, more coming every day. So make sure you subscribe, rate, if you would do that for me. I would certainly appreciate it. Thank you, and I like you more than a friend. This podcast is brought to you by Sly Bar, 2061 Central Avenue, St. Petersburg. Maybe you want to become a sponsor of this program. I encourage you to do that. Email me, thehomemadebroadcast@radiosaintpete.com. Call, text, 813-693-2124. We love Sly Bar every second and fourth Tuesday of the week there. We do the stand-up comedy open mic, $50 cash prizes. It's a lot of fun. It's always a good time. Second and fourth Tuesday of the month. Check out hmbradio.com for other events taking place that we put on here, comedy events here in the St. Pete area. I wanted to talk a little bit because I saw something that annoyed me. And I think I'm critical of anything I see from my left-leaning friends, I think because I have so many of them. Left-leaning, meaning in politics, I try to just not even bother anymore. I don't even want to talk about it. I'm so sick of it. But I see just so much crap from them. And the one that I saw that really bugged me, and I think that this is why I don't really talk about the right very much, because I don't have any friends really on the right. So I'm kind of just, all I see is their nonsense, meaning my friends on the left side's nonsense. And the thing that I saw that bugged me was a poll that came out that said Donald Trump is more disliked than Nickelback, poll says. I don't know. Like, I know it's mostly in jest. It's just like, right? But this is how out of touch people are, really. Because Nickelback has sold 50 million records. That is a lot of records. In fact, they are the second or third highest selling foreign artist in America. And if you think back, really, to imports that we've had here, like the Beatles, Led Zeppelin, U2. Nickelback's outsold more than one of those guys. That's three right there. So they were either second or third. So Nickelback is pretty well liked. I know they're a jest, you know, with my group. Not my cup of tea either. I get the disdain for Nickelback. But to say that they're not popular is just not true. And using a poll like this to prove a point that Donald Trump isn't liked, it it doesn't make sense. It doesn't equate. You just disproved your point, trying to prove your point with a piece of evidence that is meaningless. I mean, that's the problem I have here. And I know I'm probably taking it more seriously than I should, but that seems to have been the it just happens all the time. It's really obnoxious, frankly. Like, Chad Kruger, whatever his name is, what a loser. It's like, that guy has like $50 million and probably gives it to his wife, Avril Lavigne, three times a day, I'm going to say, on a slow day. When he's not busy making money and touring around the world and having a great life. Again, not my cup of tea. I don't listen to Nickelback on a daily basis, weekly basis. If a song comes on the radio, and I never listen to the radio anymore either, I might leave it on. Once every 10 times, maybe I'll let the Nickelback song play all the way through. But to say that Nickelback is not popular and saying that Donald Trump is more disliked than Nickelback is disproving your point. It's silly and it's dumb. So, yeah, I get it. Maybe I'm taking a joke too seriously, as I've said. Maybe. But still dumb. Anywho, so today on the show we have Ben Hamilton. Ben is a comic in the Tampa Bay area. I've seen Ben perform a couple times. Really funny dude. I know he's got an interesting story. I saw him at Coconuts when I went down there with Kyle Roos, and Andy Andrus was doing a short notice show down there, and I talked to him very briefly, and it seemed like he had kind of an interesting story. So I wanted to have him in, and I got him just in time because he's out of here. Tampa Bay is going to be no longer Ben Hamilton's home. So we have got him, like I said, just in time. He's leaving, I think, 2 days after we're recording this. So by the time this gets released, he'll probably be gone. But without further ado, here is Ben Hamilton. All right, Ben, welcome.
Thank you. Thank you for having me.
How are you? Just you got to miss my Trump rant.
Oh.
Sorry about that.
That's okay. You can still do it again. I haven't.
Well, we could talk about it if you want to. It seems like that's the topic of most conversations now that I have with anybody,
okay.
And I'm really annoyed by it. And mostly I was saying that there was this poll that got released that Donald Trump is more hated than Nickelback. And I was like, okay. But the thing about Nickelback is they sold 50 million records, and they're like the second or third highest selling foreign artist of all time. And I was like, that's a bad example. I know it's in jest, and maybe I'm taking the joke too serious, but it's just, it doesn't prove the point, you know?
Does Donald Trump have a website, though, that says doesdonaldtrumpsuck.com? Have you seen the Nickelback one?
Nickelbacksucks.com, and yeah. They have their own website?
They don't. Somebody made one. It used to say, and if you just put doesnickelbacksuck.com. Actually, let's see if you can bring it up, and then I don't want to ruin the surprise.
Does Nickelback suck? .com. I hope I spelled Nickelback right. Come on, computer.
It's one of the cool
internet.
It's one of the funniest websites I've ever seen.
Is it audio?
Mm-mm.
No.
No.
I think I spelled Nickelback wrong. Let me Google it. Does Nickelback suck? I don't see it, man.
I don't know if it's down. Like, we just looked at it the other day.
See, maybe they paid to have it taken down because they're so rich and successful that they're able to do that.
Well, basically, all it was you type in doesnickelbacksuck.com.
Yeah.
And when you hit it, it's just a black screen and it says yes.
Yes.
Yes. That's all it was.
That was pretty good.
So somebody paid. Now, as far as like politics and stuff, like I am not a political person. I voted one time in my entire life, and it was for Sanjaya on American Idol. So I was really pulling
You've
for
never him. Voted in the presidency ever?
I've never voted. I don't pay attention to politics. I caught some heat for that at a show once when I said that. People were just groaning.
Like, yeah.
Well, it's like 50-50. It's like either my fault that somebody's in there or it's not my fault. So.
Right. I think the thing is, like, the people who gripe, at least they're saying, well, I participated, so I have the right to gripe.
Right.
If you don't participate, you can't. But you don't care anyways.
Yeah, I don't. It doesn't.
You care less.
Yeah, no.
That's interesting.
I saw, let me see if I can find it really quick. My phone. I saw, I go on iFunny a lot, and I just, because it's just so entertaining to me. And I found a thing, I even posted it on Facebook. Says, I don't think America should elect any president in 2016. We just need to be single for a few years and find ourselves.
That's very true, yeah. This is amazing that this is the best we have. Mm-hmm. We got Donald Trump, and then we got a Clinton who we've had 8 years of. So it's just like, this is the best. And I guess Bernie Sanders is there, too, but let's be honest.
Is he still hanging on?
He's still hanging in, man. He's got the whole West Coast to go, but they got those super delegates on the Democratic side.
Right.
So it really doesn't matter. Your votes don't count because they all went to her. So.
And the funny thing is, like, from what I've seen or followed, which is very minimal, everybody hates both of them.
Yeah.
It's like...
Yes, and that's something that's new, too, is that they're so polarizing that I'm hoping that maybe, like, a third party can sneak in, like the Libertarian candidate.
That would be cool.
Which I would go for.
That would be cool. I mean, at one point, I will say this, though. The one thing I do like about Donald Trump, I don't share any of the views or anything like that, because, again, I don't follow any of that. I just like the fact that he has...
Well, how do you know you don't follow the views?
Well,
you don't know.
No, I mean, I don't like, as far as, like, his
go ahead. Sorry.
No. His stand on things. You know.
Okay. All right.
But just the fact that he has the guts to say, you know, he's not being politically correct. He's saying what everybody, you know, whereas most presidents, they try and, you know, sugarcoat things or they try to be too politically correct. He doesn't care. That is the only thing that I like about him is that he just says it like it is. Not that I agree with it.
He said one thing that made me really laugh, but it was kind of true too. Uh-huh. It was he said something about anchor babies, which are children that are
what is an anchor baby?
It's illegal immigrants that have a child, and then they're not considered a citizen. Seems like an okay term to me. I don't really get it. And then the guy says, I don't really think you should call them anchor babies. And he's like, well, what would you like me to call them? And they said, well, they could call them undocumented children from undocumented people. Yeah, exactly. He's like, it's too long. I'm just going to call them anchor babies.
So
moving
he coined
on.
It? He's the one that coined that phrase?
No, I think that's the thing. Like, everything's offensive now. I don't think he made up anchor baby. I'm pretty sure that was a term that was just used. I mean, it makes sense, right? An anchor baby, a baby that is now anchored to the U.S. It's just a simple term to use. It's not offensive, I don't think.
I just recently, I wrote a song, you know, because I do music stuff in my act. And
you do?
Yeah,
I do.
If you go on my, I have a website, benhamiltoncomedy.com. You can actually download some of my songs. You get all of the songs and stuff for the run. You can download them for free because I got tired of paying the money to bootleg my own stuff and people weren't buying them. I'm like, here you go.
Take it, yeah.
But I hadn't written any songs in a while, and I wrote a new one and stuff, and I played it for some people, and like some of the people that I played it for, some of my friends were like, you're gonna tick off some liberals, and again, I don't really still don't know the difference
like, really?
Between okay. liberals and conservatives. Well,
not
and stuff.
Much of a difference. Yeah.
And basically, the song it just makes fun of. It starts off with your. It sounds like a grandpa giving advice to his grandson. You know. You got to work hard for what you get. Nobody's going to give you anything free. And then it goes to the next part of the song where it's like the guy, it seems like he's falling in love. And then the real part of the song where, you know, the actual meaning is it talks about the like the people that have babies just to live on Section 8 and just keep having babies and having babies just to live off the taxpayers and the government. And it was just a funny idea to me. And I did it the last show that I did. At Two Palms, I saved it to the end, and I'm glad I did, because it got zero response.
Really?
It was just, yeah. And I was told it was going to, you know, I was going to lose at least half the crowd, and nobody had any react. They kind of giggled a little bit at it and stuff, but...
Or did you get the, oh,
no,
the
but,
groans
no,
or anything?
No, but what I did was, at the end of the song, I said, look, I'm not a political person, you know, I don't follow politics, and this was just a funny idea, and... I said, by a round of applause, how many people did that song? And be honest, how many of you were offended by that? Nobody clapped. And I was just like, what the F? I'm like, what, seriously? It's, you know, I can't stand it when people go to comedy clubs and comedy shows and get offended. You know, people are going to say things that are going to offend you.
Sure.
There was a really cool thing that somebody posted, and I shared it on my Facebook page, where a girl had asked Jon Stewart, a question about, you know, is there a line? Where's the line and stuff? And if anybody's able to find it and, you know, just check it out, he gives the greatest response, which I can't remember off the top of my head, but I watched it like four times and it's only like a minute long.
But yeah, I think I saw that today too. I didn't get to watch it yet.
Oh, it's awesome. It's awesome.
You never know what's going to offend somebody. And there's also things, hate facts,
yeah,
which are facts that are true, but people don't like them because they're not nice.
Right, right.
And I think that's one of those things, and it's hard for people to look past that.
Right.
And just be like, it's a joke. But yeah, it's true, but it's still a joke. You know, we can laugh at these things, and people just don't want to do that because they're afraid of, you know, hurting somebody's feelings, which is nice. I get this whole, you know, this justice movement, social justice thing. It comes from a good place. They mean well. But they're actually being they're the new authoritarians, which right. You can and can't say.
And that's why everything's so soft now. Everybody has to, you know, just like you're walking on eggshells. Like, you got to, like, is this going to offend anybody? Or is this going to, like, Louis C.K. Did an interview where he said something that was really, it was very profound, where they said, is anything off limits? And he's like, really, no. He goes, when something bad happens, one way to get over it is to laugh about it. Now, he said, do I agree with everything? No, you know, but at the same time, it's like, you should be able to laugh at anything.
Absolutely.
You know, it's like, I don't know. That's the one hardest part that I have dealing with as far as doing stand-up comedy. It's like, you know, how offended people get over, it was a joke. You were going to a room full of people who are there to hear jokes. You know, if you don't like it, you don't have to laugh at it.
Right.
But you don't have to sit there and, you know, start voicing your opinion in the middle of a show.
Yeah, and that seems to be more and more common. Have you noticed that over years?
Yeah, happening? Absolutely.
It's a shame. I don't know what changed. But I guess the internet had something to do with it, like having everything so open.
I blame the internet and peanut allergies. I mean, when I grew up, I'm 40 years old, and I never until, I swear to God, it just seemed like 5 years ago that, peanut allergies was just like a huge epidemic.
Yeah.
You know? Like, we played on metal slides. We drank from water hoses that tasted like metal.
Yeah.
You know, now everybody's just so.
Well, I saw a kid outside. Mm-hmm. Like, he was probably 7.
Mm-hmm.
And I was like, whoa, that's weird.
Right.
I haven't seen a kid outside in a long time. And then my first thought was, is that okay? And then I remember, like, I'm 31. I remember I used to say, we'd go.
In the woods.
Yeah. Well, we had a ditch in the back of my house that I used to play in. But it was wooded. You know, you climb trees, you get hurt. That was part of it. But now everybody's just, you know, inside on the computer.
Yeah, I grew up down in this area. I grew up in Pinellas. And I went to, you know, I graduated from Largo High and stuff.
Did you? Me too.
What year?
03.
03? 95.
Right on.
High five.
Boom. Just
high five.
That's pretty cool.
I spent most of my time in the special ed wing, which was D wing. And I think that's the only, last time I went by that, because, you know, they're rebuilding the whole thing.
Yeah.
Last time I went by that, that's the only wing left standing.
Oh, really? I thought they knocked down everything.
Unless they tore it down since then. But, like, every time I went by, I'm like, it's just standing strong with that one. But they're by the Largo Rec Center, right off of, I think it was Vaughn or something like that. I don't remember. But we used, there's right down the road, there's a wooded area. We used to call it NOM for whatever reason. But just like as kids, you know, we're like 8, 9 years old and stuff. Now it's like people won't even let their kid go out of the front yard, you know, without supervision and stuff. So
I think there's a myth, too, like the world's getting more dangerous. I think that's the 24-hour news cycle where you just hear about all these terrible things. But crime's been falling since the 50s.
Yeah.
I mean, at a pretty sharp, sharp rate. So there's this myth that, you know, you're going to get murdered walking out your door if you let your kids. They're going to get kidnapped if you let them go play outside. And it's really, I mean, of course it could happen,
right.
Sure. But it's less likely to happen now than at any time before.
Well, yeah. And I mean, also with, like, you have, with the news and stuff, the way they push things, it's almost like they're scaring you into everything, you know, whereas, like, you're like, I never would have thought about that before, but now, you know,
right.
It's like now that, okay, now somebody's going to kidnap my kid or, I mean, which, again, like you said, that happened long before they started reporting it, like, every 30 seconds and stuff on the news and whatnot, and obviously it probably happens more now, but it's just, it's the way, that's why I don't watch the news. I rarely watch the news. When I lived in Chicago, on and off for a number of years, and it's just like you turn the news on, and the first thing you see in the morning on on WGN was how many people got shot and killed in the middle of the night.
That's one place where it is getting worse.
Oh, yeah.
I think Chicago it's not getting any better. Is the exception to that rule of crime falling. I don't know. That's a mess there.
Yeah. It's every morning, like 10 people died.
Yeah. You know, it's really a shame.
I don't even know how they still
it's have more people. Than a murder a day.
Yeah.
Right?
I don't know
it's
how
like
they
a
have
couple.
People still even living in Chicago.
Pretty scary. Literally. Comedian Ben Hamilton is joining me on the Homemade Broadcast this week. So tell me about you're out of here. You're taking off. Taking the show on the road for good.
I am leaving. Again, I grew up here. I always wanted to do comedy. Well, I always wanted to do something in the entertainment field. And I was always scared to do stand-up for the longest time because I didn't know how it worked. I literally, every time I saw like a HBO special or something, I thought they were making the stuff up right there on the spot. You know, so when I finally got into it and got more into, you know, then I was like, oh, okay, I can do this. So I started back in 2008 in Chicago, and that's where I did most of it. And then the reason I came back to Florida when my son started going to college, he went to Full Sail, and, you know, and I met a lot of great people down here, and I was able to, you know, do the, a lot of shows down here. And I performed for a bunch of my friends who've known me since I was a kid, you know. So my son since moved back to Chicago, and I'm at a point where I have no ties to anything, so if I fall on my face, I'm not taking anybody down or ruining a household or anything. So I'm leaving here, and I'm going to Michigan, and then I got shows in Michigan and Chicago, and then I'm making the move out west in August.
West, like Los Angeles west?
Yeah. Yep, up to the California.
Living in Los Angeles.
I don't know if I'm going to live in Los Angeles. I mean, I can barely afford to live here, so I know I can't afford that. But I mean, I'm excited. The farthest west I've ever been was South Dakota.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
That was it. Wow. Yeah, well, that's cool. I mean, that's going to be certainly a journey. How old of a guy are you?
40.
40? Okay, and you started doing stand-up in 2008, so that's 8 years?
Yep.
So you started when you were 32, so it was a late bloomer there.
Oh yeah, yeah. I mean, I did like I did improv stuff. I mean, I took back in 2000 when I first started, when I decided I was going to go ahead and do it. I literally, actually, the day I left, Bush had just got elected president for his first term. I left a Greyhound bus station in Brooksville, Florida, and I went to Chicago, and I was taking improv classes at Second City and another place called Comedy Sports, and then. And then I ended up moving back down here. And then around 2000 and I want to say it was 2007, I went to McCurdy's Comedy Club in Sarasota, and I saw Louis C.K.
Oh,
and,
you're kidding.
Yeah, when he was doing his Chewed Up tour.
Wow.
And front row, I mean, he's my idol. That's my guy. And the day I was, that night when I saw that show, I might as well have looked at my wife at the time and just said, I'm going to go. this isn't going to work.
This
you know?
Is it.
So, but that was the day I finally decided I'm going to go ahead and do it. And I left in 2008.
So I talked to you, I remember briefly at Coconuts one night, and you were like borderline homeless for a little while up there.
Yeah, for the first, when I first moved to start doing the stand-up, when I first moved up to Chicago, I lived in my truck for 6 months at the Des Plaines Oasis, which is like the exit right before you get off to go to O'Hare Airport. So basically it was right next to the airport. I did that for 6 months, and initially I thought it was just going to be maybe a couple weeks at most. But it turned out to be like 6 months, and it sucked. It sucked out loud. But at least it wasn't. It was like around summertime. I think I went up there. It was like that time. It was like May. I think I went in May of 2008. So it was like kind of around spring, summer, whatever holiday.
So was it? I mean, like, did you not have any money and just couldn't find a place? I mean, I know it's expensive to live out there.
What happened was I actually had somewhere to stay at first. I was staying with a buddy of mine, and the first night I was there, he goes to work, and his girlfriend goes next door and bangs the neighbor, and then comes back home and tells me about it. And now I'm like, why am I involved in this? Why do I know this? So it just turned into after about 2 weeks of dealing with this, I took all of my stuff, and I put it in storage. I got a membership at a gym that was open 24 hours so I could have somewhere to shower, and I got a P.O. box. And then I just parked my truck every night at this Des Plaines Oasis. So I made enough money to stay behind on my bills that they were getting paid and stuff. And then until then, I was, my mom ended up coming into some money, and then I was able to get an apartment 6 months later. But it was, it sucked, but I mean, it was definitely worth it. I mean, I can't tell you how many times, I mean, I had to sit there and fall asleep looking at a Miley Cyrus Disney billboard every night. And
I guess she wasn't hot then either, so it wasn't even.
Well, it was the Hannah Montana one, so she was hotter than she was now.
But now that she's makes probably me, like 14.
Though. Yeah, that makes me seem creepy now.
Yeah, I had an incident like that too. I broke up with a girl and my buddy. We had talked about getting a place together. Uh-huh. And he was like, hey, come move in, man. I got this house. You know, I got a second bedroom. Okay. And as I'm moving the first box in, he goes, hey, man, my lady kind of stays here a lot. And I was like, oh, okay, that's whatever. And she never went home. So she just lived there the whole time. And then I think after about 8 months, she was like, you need to go. And I was like, oh.
So I can't stay here a lot?
Yeah, I can't. Exactly. I wonder if that's a common occurrence. Is that something that everybody experiences?
Well, what was really funny was because he had asked me at one point. He goes, she tried to hit on you? I'm like, dude, the day your woman hits on me is the day I'm leaving. And I didn't leave because she never did. She never hit on me. But I left because I just got tired of being stuck in the middle of it. So I just left the keys. And I said, look, man, I said, I got my stuff out. I said, I'm gone. And so immediately in his head, he's thinking, I screwed her. And he goes, did you sleep with her? And then that kind of ticked me off. So I wasn't even responding to his text messages, which made it even worse. I had like 30 text messages, like 40 calls, eight voicemails, and but it was a bad situation.
Would you levy that your experience living in a car was good for you? I feel like something like that would really humble you and at least know that I don't want to do this ever again. I thought about when I was like 18 going and living under a bridge for like a week and just seeing what it was like, and I totally wussed out. There was no way I was going to do that, but I felt like that would be a cool thing to at least have under your belt that you did.
It did two things. Number one, it definitely, mentally, it made me a stronger person because I almost had a lot of breaking points where I almost just said, screw it, and I almost went back home. But I just kept telling myself, I kept telling myself it wasn't going to be much longer. And I just thought to myself, if I can just get through this, then I'll be all right. And so anything bad that's happened to me since then, it's been easy to compare. As a matter of fact, sometimes whenever I would have a really bad show, what I felt like was a bad show, or if I got to like a really down moment in my life when I was in Chicago, even if I had an apartment, I would drive by and I would spend the night at that Oasis again, you know, and it was just almost like a mind clearing reminder.
Yeah, totally.
You know, but it was, I was actually telling somebody today that there was a moment where I had, a box of Pop-Tarts, you know, sitting on my seat. And I woke up one morning at the Oasis, and I saw the Pop-Tarts. And I was like, oh, because I forgot I had them. So it was like a treat. And so I go to open the Pop-Tarts, and there was a knock at my window. And I turn around, I look, and I roll my window down. And the guy goes, hey, man. He goes, look, I'm out. I just ran out of gas. I just need a couple bucks. Now, at this point, gas was like almost $5 a gallon. I literally had about 76 cents to my name, and it was sitting in a little change holder. And so I said, you see that money right there, the 76 cents? And the guy's like, yeah. I said, that's all I have. And he goes,
can I have it?
Yeah.
No kidding.
Yeah. And I was aggravated, but I was like, here. And I gave it to him. And I go to roll my window up, and he goes, hey. And I'm like, what? He goes, hey, man, can I get one of the Pop-Tarts too? Are you kidding
76
me?
76 cents.
Yeah. So, but I gave him one. I gave him a Pop-Tart, and I rolled my window up. And about a week and a half later, I was parked at the Oasis, and I was like cleaning my truck slash house out, and same dude comes walking up, and he goes, "Hey man, I just ran," and I finished his sentence, and I lost my mind on this guy. I mean, I was cussing him out, and I'm like, "How do you keep running out of gas at the same spot? And how much gas can you get for 76 cents?" You know, I went off on the dude because I'm like, I'm struggling here too. I said, go beg the truck drivers. Go bother them. Okay. Now, I sympathize with people, you know, who have struggles like that and stuff. And so, you know, fast forward about a year or two later, I'm in an apartment and stuff. Well, I was on my way to go do a show in Chicago downtown, and I was going to stop at Walmart to get a GPS because for some reason my other one fell out of the car and I lost it. Well, I had a Dunkin' Donut gift card, and I go into the Dunkin' Donut, and it was $5 that somebody gave me for Christmas. And as I'm standing there, a woman approaches me, and she's like, she has a cup of coffee, or empty cup. She's like, hey, she goes, you know, do you have a little bit of change just so I can get a cup of coffee? And I was like, yeah. I said, I don't have any money on me, so I just got the gift card. And I said, but you want something to eat too? You know, and I said, I mean, she's like, she was being, you know, very humble about it. She's like, well, and I'm like, just get something to eat. Cup of coffee, get something to eat. I said, it's a gift card, so it's no big deal. She's like, are you sure? Yeah, so I did. And I got something to eat and drink too, but I ended up not using the gift card. I ended up using my debit card. And then I went over and I just sat down with her, and I gave her the gift card. I think it was like $5 on it and stuff. No, so I was just having this conversation with her and stuff, and, you know, she's telling me about her little struggle. So I leave. I was like, you know, it's nice to meet you, whatever. So I left, and I go to Walmart to get my GPS. And while I'm there, I felt bad. So I bought a pack of hand warmers because it was wintertime. And she had said something about her hands being really cold and stuff. And then I bought a $20 gift card. And I went back to Dunkin' Donuts, and she was still sitting there. And I handed them to her, and I said, here. And I said, have a great night. And she's just kind of like, she had like shocked. And she's like, are you sure? And I was like, yeah, have a good night. I go back out. Now I'm sitting in my truck and I'm messing with the GPS. And I kept looking in the rearview mirror, and she was still sitting there. And, you know, I'm just checking. And then at one point I look up, she's gone. So I'm like looking around. All right. So I'm messing with the GPS. And then all of a sudden I hear a car horn honk. I turn around. This chick is in an Audi. Like, her car was lit up like a spaceship. More crap in her car than mine. Rolls the window down to say, hey, thanks for all the stuff, and then just left.
Wow. I've heard that. I've heard those stories where some of those panhandlers make like $40,000 a year. And they did that 2020 piece like 10 years ago. Those guys riding around in Mercedes. And it's a shame. And the harsh reality about homelessness, being in St. Pete,
right,
it's really bad here, is that the majority, it's not this like, oh, it's a mother and her kids. There are some of those, of course. Right. But there are city and state-run programs that can get those people off the streets, mm-hmm, mentally ill or drugs.
Right.
That's what they are. And I remember talking to a guy who, he was a hard-working dude. He's, let me wash your car. Like, he did work for his money, but he had a drug problem.
Right.
But I was like, what could people do, really? You live this life. What could people do to help? And he goes, nothing. Absolutely nothing. It's just a harsh reality, a morbid reality.
Yeah, there's some people that are completely capable, and then there's some, or they're just happy. I am content just getting enough money to get alcohol or my drugs or everything like that. That's just the life they want to live, you know? And I'm not saying that, you know, I was like in the gutter, but at the same time, I mean, I did have a job, you know, and I didn't have a home, you know, but I was doing what I could. And I never asked anybody for anything. I don't like doing that, even, you know, even when people offer to help. I might have told maybe two people of my situation when I was in that situation of being homeless and stuff, because I wanted to do it by myself. I put myself in that situation. It was nobody's job or anything else. And if worst case scenario, I could have just went back home, you know, but I was able to get through it and stuff. And it mentally, yeah, it made me a lot stronger, you know, going through
that. What did you do about bathing?
Yeah. Well, I had a membership at a gym that was open 24 hours.
There you go.
A day, which I should have probably used the gym, but I didn't. I would go there and shoot baskets and stuff. And it was one of those gyms that it was, you know, they provided clean towels and everything else and whatnot. And, you know, sometimes like it was Lifetime Fitness, mm-hmm, which I think there's one in Tampa, but they're all over,
sure,
Chicago,
yeah,
and stuff. They're
chain.
They're expensive as hell, but they're really nice.
Yeah.
But, you know, it's like I said, I mean, I had somewhere to shower and, you know, and then I had a friend actually who he worked at a food pantry, you know, and so he would let me come in there and like, you know, usually you go to the food pantries and stuff and they just like, how many people in your family take this box of stuff? He would let me go pick my stuff out. So, and obviously I would pick stuff that wasn't going to go bad, you know, so I mean, so when I went, and one of the coolest things that he did for me was he had won a one-night stay at a hotel and a raffle and stuff, and he just gave it to me. And that was probably, like, one of the best nights of sleep that I had. And it was just, like, even though it was, like, literally just maybe 10 hours out of my life, it was, like, the best 10 hours out of that six
yeah,
months.
Yeah, no doubt. Just sleeping in a bed. Yeah. That would be awesome. What kind of car were you?
It was a 2008 Ford F-150.
Extended cab?
Nope.
Ooh.
No.
Yeah, sleeping must have been rough.
Like, when I would sleep in it, like, I tried sleeping across the seat, and it didn't work because of the seat belts and stuff like that, so it was uncomfortable. So the only way I could sleep is I'd have to roll the seat all the way forward and then lean it back. But after, when you sleep like that for so long, it's like, you know, the blood rushes to your feet and stuff, and it, like, hurts to walk.
Yeah.
You know, so.
I had an old roommate that slept in a hammock. And I was like, he was like a skinny, svelte, you know, normal-sized human being. Like, there's no way I could sleep in a hammock. But he did it just fine for a year. I had no problems. Oh, I think he did get a bed, though, eventually, because I was mystified that he was able to do that.
Yeah, it sucks out loud. It was horrible.
So you got a job up in Chicago at a club, right? And mm-hmm. That's kind of how you started doing stand-up.
Yeah, I was able to – I got a job at the Chicago Improv. I started off as a door guy, and then I was – while I was there you know, like when they hand out the flyers, the up-and-coming shows and stuff, I noticed that there was a writing class, you know, that they held. And I was like, you know, if I wanted to take that, do we get a discount? And they're like, yeah. So that's where I first started learning to actually write. It was a gentleman named Tim Joyce, who's up in Buffalo now. But one of the coolest people, and it was one of the neatest experiences because, again, not knowing how to write, it was almost like the writing groups that they hold at Coconuts right now where – you know, you get up and you're like, okay, this is, you know, my material. And then it's like everybody gives you just suggestions and stuff like that. And you can take them or leave them, you know. But to me, that was a really cool way to do it. So I went from a door guy. And then I started there in like August of 2008.
Had you done stand-up previous to this?
Never did it before. So August of 2008, I started there. And then by February, they made me a manager or like an assistant manager or whatever, and which was cool. But at the same time, I'm like, I'm trying to get towards the stage, and I don't want to be, you know, running people. So it took 2 years of working there before they finally let me do it. And when they did, you know, from then on they started letting me. You know, I started hosting a lot and stuff. And in some ways, it was weird because it's like 1 week and I'm a manager and like, you know, like running stuff and food and kitchen and overseeing employees and stuff, and then 1 weekend I'm like you know, drinking on stage and telling jokes and everything else. And but yes, yeah, I did the whole started and get the door and then and getting up on stage and stuff. So
you did well your first time.
Good enough for them to let me keep doing it.
What club was it?
The Improv in Chicago.
I would say you did well then if you're at the Chicago Improv and, you know, getting time there.
So there was that one. And then the first big name person I got to open for was Nick Cannon. And after that, then they started, you know, letting me open up for like, you know, or host, I should say, for like bigger name acts like Billy Gardell and like John Heffron and Brian Regan and stuff like that. But it's been a great experience. And that club's always been really good to me. And that one and the other club, which is my favorite club, is it's called Jokes and Notes. The owner of Jokes and Notes used to run a club called All Jokes Aside, which is where like Bernie Mac and like Cedric, you know, Entertainer, and like Bill Bellamy, all of them got their start and stuff. And it's a predominantly black club, and it's on the south side of Chicago, on 47th and King Street. So. But it's such an amazing club, though, you know. And it was funny because, like, not a lot of, like, white people would go there, but they don't want it to be just, you know, it's not just a black club. You know, they want to diversify. They everybody can come there, you know. So, but that was the only time I was ever racist was at that club when I would stand outside, you know, and, like, all the other, you know, the other black comics, and we're just standing there, and then I, like, see these, like, hipsters from, like, the north side come walking up in their little skinny jeans, and I'm like, this cracker. It's honky.
White people love busting on white people.
Yeah, it was
the only thing you can do now to get away with. As long as you're making fun of white people, you're good to go. I said yesterday, we were at the Sly Bar, Mike, and Cam Bircher was talking about Gerard Carmichael's show, and he was telling me, oh, you got to see it, it's great. And I was like, oh, cool, I'll check it out. And then he's like telling me all these people, and he's like, it's an all-black cast. I said, oh, it's all black cast? And he went, kind of wrinkled his nose up. And I was like, what? He's like, I don't know, it just sounded rough. It sounded a little harsh. And I was like, really? Because I guess I didn't add people or something at the end. You can't even acknowledge people's race or, right, you know, without without getting.
And he's white.
I know.
Why'd he get a
James Bailey did the same thing to me. Now, they were probably just busting my chops a little bit, but I was like, oh my God, you guys are out of control with this stuff.
That's why I call him, I usually don't call him black. I call him athletic Americans.
I like to call Bailey Mexican. He loves it. He gets really mad. So you're going to move out to LA. Mm-hmm. That's the plan.
That's the plan.
Are you going to do the car thing again, or do you have a place to stay this time?
Well, initially I was supposed to go out there at the end of June. After some, I got some shows at the Improv in Chicago again, and but a bunch of stuff has changed. So now I'm not going until the end of August, so I'll have a little bit more money saved. So I'll have a little better plan. Because if I was going to do it the way I was originally going to do it, then yeah, I would have probably ended up in the car at first. But I don't want to do that again. It wasn't.
Do you know somebody out there?
I got a lot of friends, a lot of Chicago comic friends and stuff out there. One of my closest friends, actually, that I started with, we actually met in the writing group at the Improv. He lives in Sacramento, so that was the initial plan, was I was going to go out there with him. But then it's like I kind of got in this mindset where if I do that, then, you know, he just signed a lease, so that now I'm going to have to wait until his lease is up, and I'm basically putting my stuff on hold for somebody else, you know, right. And without, I mean, it's going to sound selfish, but whatever. I'm not in this for anybody else but me. Mm-hmm. You know, I'm not doing comedy, you know, for this person. I'm doing because I want to do it. And right. I don't want to.
Well, now that you're exiting mm-hmm. the Tampa comedy scene, what are the positives that you've seen and the criticisms that you see?
I met a lot of really cool people. I made a lot of really good friends. I'm going to be honest. I never performed on the other side of the bridge. One time I did. Well, I shouldn't say that. But, I mean, like, as far as the Tampa Bay area, I did a guest spot at the Improv once through the generosity of Chris Porter. Because I had worked with him in Chicago. And then I had asked him while I was there, you know, I was like, can you do the Tampa Improv? You know, and he's like, I'll be there in, like, a couple months. So, you know, I got a guest spot there. But I don't feel like I was here really long enough to, because, I mean, I've heard people say that, you know, some of them are, you know, clicky and stuff like that. And it's like that anywhere. I mean, especially, like, same thing in Chicago. Like, I rarely went in the city to do any kind of open mics because it was just, to me, it was, besides being clicky, it was like, you go to the open mic, you could be the first one there. And there's, like, all of a sudden, there's a list of 30 people. All of their friends are going up. You're getting bumped further and further down the list. And it makes you mad because a lot of these people are just appealing to their friends. Yeah. And what they're saying isn't making any sense. It's not funny to anybody else. And it's nobody you're going to see in a club. Mm-hmm. You know, so just a lot of it just felt like such a waste of time.
Yeah.
But I was lucky enough to get in, you know, with, like, Bull and Steve Eric and, you know, Chris Gorgeous and stuff like that. And just I was just lucky enough to meet a really solid core of people who really, you know, helped me get a lot of shows and, you know, took me under the wing. You know, like, you know, Bull would basically take me to shows that he was headlining to either, you know, if I was able to feature for him or just to do a guest spot, you know, and then I would end up getting booked to headline from that, you know.
Right. So all in all, pretty much the same everywhere.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, you just gotta. Hopefully, you're lucky enough to get in with the right group of people that, you know, have the same, you know, ambition and drive as you. And
right on. Well, Ben, we're done already.
All right, cool.
I appreciate you coming in. Good luck to you. Give out your social media where people can find you.
I got my website, benhamiltoncomedy.com. And again, if you like any of the songs, you can download them for free. I'm on Facebook just under Ben Hamilton, and then my Twitter is, I don't do a lot of Twitter, so hang on, give me like 1 second. It's Comedian Ben Ham.
Perfect.
On Twitter.
Ben, good luck to you. Thanks for coming in.
Appreciate you. Thanks for having me out, man.
Check out hmbradio.com for other podcasts, including mine, James Bailey's. Kyle Roos's is coming this week.
He's sexy.
Oh, I love him to death. Thank you, guys. We'll talk to you next week. Have a great one.